This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to the Brad and Chad Show here on the Place to Be Nation Network. And now your hosts, Brad Woodling and Chad Campbell. Walking on a dream.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another quarterly installment of Brad and Chad. This is Brad, of course, and good to be back. It's been quite some time. As always, with me tonight, I have Mr. Justin Rosero sitting in. He's more than the producer. He's been on every episode. So, Justin, how are you?
I'm on more than you and Chad combined.
It's true. It is true. You are the rock for a show, another show, one of the many. And so, speaking to Chad, as tradition would have it, we have not crossed paths in quite some time. We're going all the way back to the WrestleMania ranking show we did. Since then, of course, both of us had babies, and SummerSlam we did with Mr. Steve Willey, which actually
now, by the way, I'm going to call BS on this, because you said earlier you haven't even talked to him, but you were on the Halloween one, weren't you, together, and the Christmas PTV, you were on those.
So a podcast historian could say, now I actually said it for BNC, hadn't interacted on this show.
No, I haven't talked.
Oh, no. Because we did the Survivor Series 98 rewind show with Scott, where I got to pick my favorites and be on a, do a show. So
we have
interacted. But anyway, so we had Steve Willey on for SummerSlam, and then our good friend Ben Morris filled in for Survivor Series and Royal Rumble. I shouldn't say filled in, they're, you know, esteemed guests that we had. But that leads us to tonight. So we skipped Mania. We had good intentions for this Undertaker ranking show that didn't happen. But we're back with some King of the Ring fun, where we're gonna rank some brackets and talk tournaments, do some rebooking, and so it'll be pretty good. But so our third guest is the living legend himself, the where the big boys play man, and Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Pretty good. I don't know if there's another podcast out there where you start the introduction by saying, as always, we're joined by, and it's someone that doesn't have their name in the show.
I know. Well, that's kind of the running. That's the running shtick, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
The co-host is me, and you're the
kind of like
guy.
Kind of like the Kevin Kelly's co-host. I should have called you that.
Right. You know what we're missing though is good old Will from Texas.
That's like pretty good. How many takes did it take you to do that break, Chad, real quick?
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, the PWOPTBN. feed is quite the mouthful there. I don't know. Maybe we could come up with a cooler name.
The man who knows more about 90s wrestling than anyone, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
Hey, you're the one that demands a break every 2 months, so
I don't demand
whatever.
A break, he's actually the one that was bitching enough about it to make
I'll,
a new
I'll
one.
I'll only get so many scripts.
Remember?
Well, it's really good, and I thought, Chad, that you did really well with it, and you guys had good timing. I know that Parv, he whipped that up pretty quick, not to pull Kurt back. I was impressed that he wrote that, and it was good to go. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to start back at 1993 King of the Ring. Now, I'm sure you wrestling historians listener are going to go back and want to debunk, you know, 87 through 91 when it was in Providence every year, and Justin, I'm sure you remember. I didn't give you 91. What was the show that I had got a fan cam of?
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah, I think
I feel
it was
like
91
I completely. Once the network started, I lost all track of DVDs. Like I just got stacks of stuff that I got that I never watched because the network started, and I'm just too lazy now to put DVDs in. Unless it's for the Seinfeld rewatch, I literally never put a DVD in, or Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. I never put anything in my DVD player, so I just have all the stuff I got that I was all excited to watch, and I just never do now.
Yeah, and I don't know when we'll find the time. So
I need to have like a vasectomy, so I just have an excuse to have 2 days to sit on the couch, and then I can just go through everything.
That's one way to do it, I guess. There you go, where you can break your ankle or something. But that would work. One, right? But anyway, yeah. So we're going to talk King of the Ring. We're going to start with 1993. Now, yeah. It's fair to say we have touched on the 1993 show a number of different ways of recently at Place to Be Nation. Of course, we have the Vintage Vault refreshes that you and Scott have written. Just kind of worked your way through that just last week, actually. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you have your ebook too, which came out, which covers through 92. So there's a written review of your thoughts out there. Of course, the live watches and the Raws were kind of – they did the qualifying matches were talked about on there. We went right up to the 93 show. And then, of course, you know, we had the kids from the King of the Ring 93 show come on with the male family, and you guys did a quick pod with the cowboy on 1993 also. So I think it's fair to say
Chad was there, right?
Yeah, Chad was there too. Yep. Chad and the cowboy, which is a good show. So a lot of audio out there, but you know, hey, we're gonna talk about where this one ranks and what we would do to change it. So Justin, I know you really wanted to talk about Doink here, so I'm going to let you have a little bit of a soapbox and talk.
I was only kidding with that. And also, just to clarify, we're not going past 02. We're just doing the
pay-per-view. That's correct. Version. It's only the pay-per-view. Yeah. We're not interested in SmackDowns or, you know, I went to the one in 2010. We're not even going to talk about that. So, heading back to 1993, with Bret Hart and his great performance here. Justin, this is a great lineup. Tell me about what you would do to maybe change things a little bit.
Not too much on this one, because I think Bret was the obvious winner. I think Bigelow going to the finals was good. It was a good push for him. The only thing I would have done differently is not had Tatanka or Luger in the tournament, because I thought it hurt the obvious draw, and unless you were willing to bite the bullet, and it worked out well that they didn't have Luger lose here because of they wanted to keep him undefeated and strong for what was coming. And Tatanka, they weren't ready to pull the trigger there yet. So I could see maybe having, I don't know. I think I just would have had neither of them in there. I would have just found two other guys to put in that spot. Maybe that's where you use Doink. I thought Duggan laying down for Bigelow was fine as his farewell. Perfect and Hughes was another weird one, too, because they didn't want Hughes to lose. So you kind of got a DQ there and then a draw, and you only have four opening round matchups and two end like that. I thought it hurt a bit. But I just watched that Tatanka-Luger match, and it's obvious they're like, just in rest mode for 11 minutes, and then the last four, they pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chad, you know how there can be like an NBA, you know, playoff or whatever, and everybody remembers one series and kind of forgets the final. I mean, is there any bigger or more prominent case in wrestling where, like, if you maybe a casual fan would think that the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match was the final, but they always forget that it was actually Bam Bam and there was a restart. When I rewatched it the one time, I completely forgot there was a restart. So I'm watching them go like, what's going on here? You know, kind of jumps out to you. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that too? And kind of obviously, and maybe you could talk a little bit about where you kind of rank the Hart Perfect match.
Yeah, I think, I actually think overall this show with Bret Hart, everything's a little underrated. Hart versus Perfect certainly gets the most buzz. And I think kind of in more recent times, it's being talked up where it's seen in more corners as the superior match to SummerSlam 91. But I still think probably if put to an overall internet vote, SummerSlam 91 would still be deemed by the consensus as the better match. But I think this is a better match for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really worked well in a babyface versus babyface match and ratcheting up the intensity, having some sportsmanship but also some chippiness. And that's something that Hart was very good at throughout his career, as we saw with this match and Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8. So both of those kind of are his signature examples of how to do a face-versus-face match effectively. The final, like you, Brad, when I just rewatched that match about a month ago, I was really surprised at it. I watched the Spain Bret Hart versus Bam Bam Bigelow match that Hart apparently really likes. I thought that match was good. I think this match is way better at King of the Ring. The restart's a little odd, and it goes a long time after the restart. But I think it's a very good match too. I think I ended up ranking it 3.5 stars around there. And the opener versus Razor Ramon, I think you can certainly you go back and forth on whether that or Royal Rumble is the better match, but both of them are still very good matches. And I think Razor had grown a good bit as a performer from January to June. So you can see that too. So overall, I mean, I guess, like, before I rewatched that show, in my mind, I was thinking, you know, King of the Ring 93, Bret Hart kind of has a great performance and he gets attacked by Lawler at the end, and it's the end of Hulkamania. Those are kind of the three things, but bell to bell in ring, his three matches are all very different, all at least good, and sometimes just absolutely great, like the Mr. Perfect match. So that top of the bracket, I think, is tremendous.
In 47 really. Minutes total, his in-ring matches, yeah. the three. So, I mean, that's over a third pretty much of the show.
Right.
Is him wrestling.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, there about the Bigelow restart. I mean, that one's going 18 minutes, mm-hmm. too, and definitely goes on a little bit longer. Hell of a performance there. So let's move to 94. So we have kind of a baseline here with a great show to start and a great bracket.
I just want to mention one thing about Brett, yeah. too. I think he was the perfect guy to win the first one in the manner he did, go through three hard fought matches against three very different opponents. They were all very good because it kind of legitimized the concept. And I thought JR and Savage and Bobby were really good here too. Putting over the tournament concept. I thought JR was like the perfect guy to have for the first ever pay-per-view King of the Ring, cause he's so into the tournament and sports build. And
sure.
Savage is really good at putting over the time limits. What the crown meant. Like, multiple times during the show, he said that he thought it was equal or greater, or at least equal to the world championship if Brett won. So I thought they were trying to make it up to Brett that way, too, by putting this almost on equal footing as the world title. So I just wanted to mention that I thought they did a really good job setting up the tournament for being something special in the first edition.
I agree, and I don't think there could have been anybody else with Brett. I think it worked perfect, even with him as a babyface, to come off losing the belt, having the run he did to, like you said, completely legitimize the concept. He's a top-tier guy at this point, too, and then to have him go through what he did, really well done all around. So when we move into 94 with his brother down in Baltimore with our good friend, or Donovan, who did this one. So, and I actually think too, in looking back through this bracket, and Chad, I'll start with you here. This is kind of sneaky good with kind of how they laid it out. You know, Owen, of course, coming off of WrestleMania, and then Razor Ramon also coming off of his performance there. Both guys really hot. Chad, talk a little bit about what you think of this bracket and kind of. I mean, we'll start too, but first with kind of the matches and kind of your thoughts on the whole tournament.
So I like most of the booking that was actually done in this show. But I think 94's roster, when you look at it as a whole, and I think this bracket kind of portrays that as. I mean, there is some exciting stuff. You got the 1-2-3 Kid Owen Hart semifinal match, which is, always heralded as one of the best sub-4-minute matches of all time. Mm-hmm. Certainly up there. But I think otherwise, besides that, you're starting to see kind of the roster overall. I mean, IRS is in the semifinals.
That was his biggest year, though, singles push-wise.
Yeah, like, but he had still the match semifinals.
Yeah. But he was looked at as like a strong IC level guy. Like he had he almost won the title at the Rumble, and he was kind of one of the main guys with DiBiase stable coming into the summer. I don't know. That never felt too weird for me that IRS was in that spot. Don't worry, he came off he was pretty highly regarded in the WrestleMania semi-main event the year before. I think you're right.
I'm trying to think of who could replace, and there's not. Well,
I mean, look at the roster. Luger was just, obviously with what he was doing before, but he really has I know he comes out in the tag match in the card later on, but
he does nothing, yeah.
He does nothing, right? He just kind of walks out and they kind of make a big deal of it. But
I mean, if you want to flip it, Chad, what you could have done is had Bigelow on the other bracket and have Razor beat IRS in the opener. And
that's
then
what I would have
Yeah,
done.
Beat Bigelow in the second round.
I don't know if you want to do Bigelow Mabel.
Well, no, I wouldn't have Mabel. Mabel's the one guy I'd take out of this thing because, I don't know, he was still kind of goofy tag guy. And I know Mo was hurt, so they're starting his little singles run. But IRS Mabel's worse than Bigelow Mabel. At least that would have been like a battle of the big men, and Bigelow beating him looked better than like IRS barely like rolling up next. Like, that was a weird pin where he's like laying next to him.
All these matches are really short too. I've never
very short.
I mean, we just talked about how long Brett wrestled, and I'm looking now at Wikipedia. I mean, I knew of course Owen 1-2-3 Kid was short, and
went under
20, I don't remember a ton of the other matches here, but I guess the longest match is like 8 minutes.
Yeah, under 20 for all three of his. Well, you could have done Bigelow Doink in the first round, and closed out Doink's, you know, feud with Bigelow there. And then Razor IRS close out their feud, and then you do Razor Bigelow and get Mabel out of there.
Almost, I wonder if this show could have been. I mean, because Piper Lawler as the main event is so bad. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have seen Lawler, I guess, in the tournament, but I don't know how you would have done that, because I think he'd have been cool, and I mean they were starting to cool him off anyway. I almost see like him getting upset by 1-2-3 Kid would have been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have done that. But just seeing Lawler in the I mean, I would just scrap that main event. Watching the TV for that, it was heatless going into it, and then it was atrocious watching it out. I don't know. I mean, this show is not a bad one, but it does feel like a placeholder where they certainly, I mean, the objective was to give Owen some credibility because him versus Brett was going to be the feud of the summer. I mean, they faced off on tons of house shows, had the big SummerSlam match.
Right. They definitely wanted him. They definitely wanted him to get the win. I remember heading in as a kid. Well, I mean, whatever, preteen.
Right.
I really thought Razor was going to win and beat Jarrett in the finals. I remember that clearly. I had my little bracket drawn up. And because Jarrett seemed to be starting to get that push too, and coming off Brett winning in 93, I guess in my mind, you know, another happy face would win and take it home. I think they had Piper Lawler close the show because they don't want the Brett Diesel DQ on the end of the show. And I don't think they wanted Owen his coronation at the end of the show. I don't think they saw him as a main event guy just yet. I think this was part of him becoming main event guy. I don't think they wanted to end on such a sour note with him getting coronated. So I think they probably viewed Piper Lawler as like their send the fans home happy kind of thing.
Another thing too, like I know Owen winning was their objective, but what if you put Lawler in the title match and put Diesel in this tournament? I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, because they never had blown off Brett and Lawler.
No, and that could have been the end of that. It was still pretty hot, and that gives Brett a, you know, I mean, nobody's going to think Lawler's win the title, but
Right. Nobody
thought Diesel was either, and Brett could have won clean.
So do you have Diesel win the whole thing?
Yeah, that's what I'm EQ wondering. I'm wondering, what do you do with that? Because I do think, here's my thoughts. Like, Owen versus Brett, for me as a feud, peaked at Mania. That's just my thoughts. Watching 94, I liked this. I liked the stuff with Neidhart. The cage match at SummerSlam has its... I definitely think it's a very good match. I actually like it a good bit, but I can see the flaws of it. But
they had to run with it, right? I mean, after Owen beat him at Mania, you can't just not...
I would think you would have to, but I don't know if necessary. I think Owen... I mean, this show is booked, so Owen is seen as credible, and I just don't know if it accomplished that.
Hmm. But I don't think that means they shouldn't have done it, though. Because heading in, you're not going to know whether or not it legitimizes.
Possibly, but I think they could have done... I mean, I think you could rebook all that. I think there's a lot of rebook. I mean, I guess if Diesel wins, then what do you do? Do you straight up hot shot him as quick as he could? But
I don't know. I think Diesel. I think Diesel winning by DQ and hanging with Brett and having that, you know, shady Neidhart finish, I thought that legitimized him more than winning the tournament would have. I mean, you just said it didn't do anything for Owen. I don't know if it does anything for Diesel. Like, I think him hanging with Brett and getting that title match actually did more. Like, to me, that was like, oh, wow, this guy, okay, you know, here he is.
Yeah, but I think that match damages Brett. To me.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, Diesel was a big guy. He's got Sean with him. Brett was trying to figure out a way to beat him, and we don't really find out if he can. I mean, Diesel didn't have him beat, per se. I know he hit the jackknife, but... it's like he pinned him for like a visual fall, and then Neidhart came in or anything like that. And we've seen Brett escape. I don't think it hurt. I think everyone believed in Brett no matter what at the time.
I guess. I just, to me, like this reign with Brett, and this is one of my criticisms of Brett of why I think he's, you know, really, really good. And when I do my greatest wrestling ever list, he will be on there. But. I mean, this reign in 94 is seen as his signature reign, and you look at his pay-per-view, you know, he has this match, and he has the SummerSlam match, which, I mean, it's a cage match where both people are trying to run up and escape the cage. I don't know. I mean, it's not a blood feud match the way the SummerSlam match was wrestled in any
way.
But
I don't know. I've made this argument so many times, but I just feel like it fits the idea is that Owen wasn't, he already beat Brett. He just wanted to steal his title and rub it in his face.
I think from Owen's standpoint, it's fine. From Brett, it looks very suspect.
So I think that, you know, one thing you could do if you still wanted Owen to win, Chad, to your point, you know, since you have Diesel and Razor at SummerSlam, you know, you set that up by having them on the same side of the bracket. You know, maybe Razor advances by DQ, and then Diesel instead of Neidhart is who comes out in the final, and Owen wins like that. So you have that hot feud, and they go into SummerSlam. Although Neidhart's important because he's...
I say, yeah, Neidhart was kind of linchpin of the heart.
Right, right.
You know, having him involved because I like that swerve a lot. I liked when Neidhart came out with Brett. I thought that was really well booked. Like how they sow the seeds where he costs Brett, but he keeps the title and runs away.
Right. And Owen cuts the promo on it. Right. How, you know, Neidhart wants to keep the title for him. He didn't want, you know, somebody else to take it from Brett.
Right.
So
I thought
Owen
that was smartly booked.
I really
don't have too many qualms with this. I mean, other than I like the idea of switching Bigelow and IRS around. Like, I think that would be fine. Maybe it makes it a little bit more believable that Bigelow may go. Would you have flipped to Tonka and Kid, Chad? And have Tatanka, I feel like maybe it's more believable if Tatanka's in the semis because you could believably think they could do Tatanka Bigelow as a final if you want to add a little mystery to it.
Yeah, that's true. And Tatanka was, I mean, that was a pretty, that was already, the seeds were being planted, him and Luger's deal.
Right, so maybe you do, you know, Owen Kidd in the first round, Tatanka Jarrett in the first round, Tatanka wins. And then you have your final four, Razor, Bigelow, Owen, Tatanka. And that at least adds a little bit more. Like, you knew they weren't going to do IRS and Kidd in the freaking final, so.
Right, right.
Once you get to the semis here, it's pretty obvious.
This is kind of a show where a lot of the people here are not, I wouldn't say, like, the people in the tournament, I don't know, I mean, like, Razor, he's I wouldn't say he's on the decline, certainly. But I don't know if he's peaking at this time. Same with some. I mean, Jarrett. You know, Jarrett is coming on, but he seems like he's on the upcline. Not really ready to turn him completely up to the top of the card. I can't remember what I was thinking as a kid, but just looking at the bracket now, it does seem very obvious that Owen would win this tournament based on the booking going in. But I think Razor's a credible enough finalist that you could conceivably think he could win.
Right. Oh, I think I still thought he was. Like, it's weird because, you know, I'm just going by myself as a 13-year-old at the time, a mega fan. You know, even though Owen beat Brett, he still didn't feel, and maybe this is to your point, but he still didn't feel on that level to me where I thought he was definitely losing to Tatanka on the first round. And then even in the finals, like, I still was surprised when he beat Razor at the end. Because Razor just seemed so strong to me that it seemed obvious that he was going to win the whole thing.
Right.
Now, let me ask you guys, was the Brett 1-2-3 Kid match before this show or after?
After.
Yeah, it was
July. It was after.
And then Owen and Kid fought in August.
Right.
And that was really good, too.
if I've ever seen that match. So is there any debate on if this bracket would fall above 93 and how the booking was?
I mean, so we're grading booking or quality?
Well, looking at what actually happened, not our rebooks.
No, I know, but are we talking like match quality, or are we just saying their booking of the tournament is what we're ranking it on?
I think we could do a combination of both.
Okay, so just overall.
Is that fair?
Yeah,
overall.
I just want to make sure I get the criteria right. If it was straight booking, I think I kind of like 94 a little bit better.
Well, that's why I was kind of pumping it. You know, not that I always be like, well, and earlier we were talking, you know, when I was prepping for this, I was like, man, I'm really, I dug the booking that they did here. But I think overall it comes in just a little bit behind 93 for me.
Overall, yes, I would say 93 is the best so far.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, let's move to the City of Brotherly Love in 1995.
Jesus.
And 95 is so frustrating. Because I remember being really actually excited for the show. I mean, main event aside. And when you look at the guys they have, I'm sure we'll talk about this, the guys they have on the roster, and just look at the qualifying round, it amazes me what we end up with in the final. It's like a downward pyramid if you look at the bracket of how strong the opening round was. To where we get to the finals, like the worst possible choice of a final, I think, you know, outside of Jacob Blue making it for what they had available here in this tournament.
Yeah, I'm going to task you guys with this question, and Justin, we'll start with you. And I'm going to kind of put it in the same mold of, I'll put a current day slant on it. You know, we talked about when this year's Royal Rumble happened, we said, well, but how would you book it where Reigns had to win, right? So let's say the stipulation for rebooking this tournament is Mabel has to win. How do you make the best tournament with Mabel winning?
You don't.
And obviously, for some reason, they were going to push Savio on the other side of it, which is tough when you're trying to push. Like, I mean, geez, they could have put so many different guys in on that side to help with him and, you know, to even get there. But Mabel has to win. How do you rebook this bracket?
All right. Well, first, I'll say two things. One, I don't think it was supposed to be Savio. I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be Razor, and then he got hurt.
Sure. That's fair. I'm glad you brought that up.
So I'm using Razor in mine. He's fighting injured. I don't care if he's got a busted rib. Second of all, Shawn Michaels would have been my pick if I'm not forced to have Mabel. I think it was his tournament to win. And I remember just being shocked when he came down and Barry Dudinsky was doing the memorabilia shill. And Shawn comes up to join him on the thing and he puts the crown on and it doesn't fit. Like, that was the first alarm bell going off in my 14-year-old head sitting at my buddy Jim's house. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why doesn't the crown fit him if he's going to win? I remember us trying to talk ourselves into, well, whatever. He's just going to play it off. And then it didn't really cross my mind yet that, well, it must be designed for someone with a really fucking big head. And only one guy in the left of the tournament at that point had a giant head, and that was Mabel. But I would have all right, well, my eight men would have been Mabel, Taker, Shawn, Owen, Davey Boy, Luger, and probably Jarrett. Not Yoko, I don't think. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Luger, Jarrett.
Not Mantar.
No.
For the listeners, I know that's right. Owen, and they did that draw, right? So they
were both knocked out.
They were both knocked out. Which,
and then Yoko and Luger got the second spot, and Yoko beat him.
Right. Yeah, that's a point. You know, since, I mean, technically Owen and Davey Boy, they were in the tournament then, so that's really, like you said, loaded and then really ass backwards.
Waste. And then they don't even end up being on the show. So you don't have...
Right.
You don't have Lex Luger.
Right. Tatanka and Sid are in the main event.
Yeah, you don't have Owen Hart, British Bulldog, Lex Luger, and your IC champion, Jeff Jarrett. None of them are on the show.
Wow.
Which is absurd. I mean, you're already thin as it is. You got Bob Holly, the Roadie, Savio Vega, like, in this tournament. And you have a bye. And you have those guys all sitting on the bench. It was just really weird.
Yeah. And then you do, too, like...
No
and Chad, I'll get to you
in
a second.
One of the few pay-per-views in 30 of history. No title matches.
And probably the best thing they could... The best thing they did in it was Mabel defeating The Undertaker the way he did. Because, again... the story is you have to have Mabel win. That's it. We're building him. We're going to feed him the Diesel at SummerSlam. So Mabel has to win. So I mean, the Undertaker thing is probably the best thing they did with it.
But the problem is, how many guys? Who do you have Mabel go over? I mean, if you really want to make a megastar, you have him go over Taker, Shawn, or Razor, right?
I mean, saying. I mean, you could even do Taker, and then Vega beats Kama. He beats Vega, and then on the other side you have Shawn, and he beats Shawn in the finals.
But do you really want to beat Shawn?
I mean, I think that if Mabel has to win, I think that's the best case scenario.
But. Yeah, and that's really with everybody playing ball, too, and I don't want to get too much into that, but I mean, Shawn Michaels just in the title match at WrestleMania.
I would have forced Razor. I just would have forced Razor.
Yeah.
I would just go out there and lay down for this guy. It's a rib injury. It's not getting broken.
I mean, you could really. I think if you take the Mabel off the plate, you can have so many options with this. With this show.
So let's transition to that then. So take Mabel off the plate with the goal still to be that the winner is going to face Diesel.
Yeah.
So, Chad, I'll start with you. So what do you do then? How do you book this?
Well, so how do we think Diesel's reign was by this point in time? Because I got some thoughts on this. Because
I think it was still strong. Not strong. Yeah. It was medium. Not what it would become.
Right, because you have Hart. Again, we just talked about like Lawler versus Hart. This is essentially their blow-off. It's way too late. I don't know who would be the best... I think Taker Diesel at SummerSlam 95 is a pretty great main event, and then it could even play into 96 with Taker getting his win back at WrestleMania.
I just don't think they wanted to split Diesel. I don't think they wanted to split his pop. It already
like
kind of happened
crowd
with Brett.
Support, right.
It already kind of happened with Brett and Shawn, you know, in Rumble and WrestleMania. Yeah, and that was my other point, too, why Diesel's reign was still okay. Because he had two pretty good matches at the Rumble and Mania. Had the Sid kind of fart, but he had the, you know, he ended up with the elbow injury. And that In Your House 1 match isn't, like, awful. It's just kind of boring. And then this match is where it kind of starts. But even here, he had that bad elbow injury. So they kind of explain it away, and that you explain it by the booking. Oh, well, they put the Tatanka with him. To me, In Your House 2 is where it really starts to sag a little bit. So I would have just blown off Sid.
Razor.
Huh?
I mean, you could do him as well.
I would have had, I would have just blown off Diesel Sid at the show and not done it again in your house too. That's what I would have done. Not wasted time with this tag match.
Yeah, but then who do you have won in this thing?
Well, I would have never, I don't think I would have turned Bigelow yet. What if he wins the tournament and loses to Diesel at SummerSlam, and then you turn
Diesel
him.
Diesel versus Bigelow.
Then you have DiBiase turn on him. Like, you're like, all right, you fucked me at Mania, and now you blew your title match. Now I'm really done with you, kind of thing.
It's really tough because any option we know in retrospect is better than Mabel, but still, right. Diesel versus Bigelow is not a... I wouldn't say that's the tastiest of SummerSlam main events.
No, but going with their logic. I mean, if you want to say Dream or whatever, I like the Taker idea, Shawn, Razor... They just weren't. Right. I just don't think they were going to do that. I think they wanted a heel.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they still had faith in him. So yeah, I mean, you could have done the Bigelow. I think that's fine. But then how do you work out the tournament? I mean, I guess you could add Bigelow. I mean, Bigelow beating Taker would have been a nice surprise.
So what if Shawn's not even in the tournament? So what if you do Shawn in a? So you have the singles match, and then what if you have Shawn fight? Maybe you do Shawn and Sid. Maybe you do, I guess Diesel's going to fight Sid. What if you put Shawn in the tag match then instead? Shawn and Diesel.
Right.
Against Bigelow. Well, no, Bigelow's out. So yeah, Shawn and Diesel against Sid and, I don't know. I hate using Tatanka. Maybe Bundy would be a little bit better. Maybe something like that. So get Shawn out of the way so he doesn't have the job in the tournament. And then you have Bigelow go for Taker in the final. You know, you have Razor back in there, Luger, Jarrett, Kama.
I think Owen and Davey definitely need to.
Yeah, Owen and Davey. Yep.
I mean, they can do their draw in the tournament if you want to get them out. But
right.
Well, and I think that Owen too. If we go back to the motto where we're looking for people for Mabel to go over, I think Owen is an easy one that would work to help him too.
Maybe Bulldog, I think. I don't think they were going to do heel.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, this kind of shows. I mean, I guess if they, I mean, this shows them with moving to the in your house model. If they didn't have that, then there's probably a good chance Sean beats Jarrett here, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah. I guess they were saving. I mean, obviously they were saving that, but
I would have done Taker Jarrett in the first round. Bigelow. So if you do Jarrett Taker, Razor Bigelow, Owen Bulldog, and then Luger, comma, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then you have Taker go over. You have comma beat Luger. You have Taker. Maybe Taker beats comma by DQ to set up SummerSlam. And then do Bulldog beats Owen and loses to Bigelow. And then Bigelow Taker in the finals. And maybe comma comes back out and costs Taker. You could do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Man, it don't take much to beat what we got.
No, not at all. That's the easy.
I mean, that's what it is.
We're not trying to hit on the low hanging fruit too much. So I kind of like switching it up with at least going through our paces on it. So I don't think there's any discussion that this one would rank as the lowest we've had so far. So we're still kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to watch it, and when we get to where the big boys play, I'll be watching some of these really bad 95 WCW pay-per-views, but I've always thought this show has a real legit claim as probably the worst pay-per-view of all time, just in my mind, honestly. Like, I don't know. Even stuff that, like, pay-per-views that I think are bad, something like Uncensored 95, I think has more just kind of campiness and hokiness and memorability than this. I don't know. It just feels like a pile of shit.
It's definitely in the conversation.
Right.
I mean, I'm just in, you know, we're into 04 with some of these for the Vintage Vaults. And, you know, Bash 04 was pretty bad, but it still had Eddie JBL and Ray Chavo, which smoke anything on this show.
Exactly. No doubt.
But we'll see. There may be some shows in 05. Like, was it Backlash 05? Isn't that one pretty bad?
I fell asleep during that one. So literally halfway through, woke up.
They're mid-aughts. They could be bad. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But this is definitely in the conversation.
Easily. Right. Yeah. Sure. I think so.
Interesting.
I mean, if at the time, as a 14-year-old, I couldn't find ways to explain it away, you know it's bad.
Agreed. So let's move to Steve Willie's hometown, home state. We're going to Milwaukee,
Big
Wisconsin.
Bucks fan, Steve Willie.
Yeah.
Young Bucks.
And Chad was just in Milwaukee. Was it at the Mecca Arena Super Bowl too? Same place?
Yeah.
Okay. So we got King of the Ring 1996.
Yeah, real quick, Brad, I never realized this is the same place. So obviously this is where Austin is like born, which is kind of odd because in a lot of ways he ruins that tag match in Super Brawl 2 for a lot of people. So I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
And it's also the infamous garage door rampway where Brian Pillman hobbles in for his pay-per-view debut. And then Over the Edge 98, I think. Do we see it again there too in that background? Because I know they're there for that show too. But
is it in the Mecca? I thought they were in the Bradley Center.
Yeah. No, I think I'm pretty sure Over the Edge 98's in the Mecca.
Wow. So yeah, that's really cool for Austin. I mean, I talk about the three pay-per-views. That's amazing, actually.
Wisconsin Center Arena, which I think is the Mecca.
Yeah, they renamed it. Okay. Yeah, that's really neat.
And they got some pretty big shows. I mean, that's three legit really good shows there.
Yeah.
So in 1996 we have, I think there's some interesting things we could talk about here, because a huge name, literally and figuratively here, is Vader, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Vader, in looking through things, I mean, he does beat Ahmed to advance to, you know, he gets the bye through the quarterfinals to the pay-per-view. But this guy has a Lex Luger-like record in the King of the Ring where he just flat out stinks. Because so then they have, so of course, you know, Jake Roberts, Vader gets DQ'd in a horrible booking there. So let me start with you guys. Is that, of course, you know, Austin being a heel at the time, and they're playing up Jake Roberts, and Jim Ross is, you know, talking about how this is nowhere near the battle, as big of a monster as Vader is, that, you know, alcohol and drug recovery that didn't happen, you know, was for him. But so let's start with, does Vader Austin work in the finals, other, you know, being heel? I mean, obviously they, that was what was, an issue was there, but how do we, Chad, I'll start with you. Is there any booking we can do with Vader and Austin to make everybody come out looking good?
Yeah, this is in some ways the opposite of 95, where who won the tournament obviously worked out tremendously better than they ever imagined, and even imagined when he won the tournament in 96. But kind of booking wise, there's a lot going on that's a mess coming into the show. So when Vader beats Ahmed on TV, mm-hmm. that's kind of an awesome, infamous moment where afterwards Ahmed gets the mouth to mouth from Goldust and freaks out and destroys the backstage areas. Raw fades to black. I mean, Vader was, I guess Vader hadn't had any missteps, I think, up to this point. This is probably his first kind of stumble in WWF, where he'd been booked as a monster going in. I think this tournament felt like his to lose. I don't know. Even going with Austin, it feels like a really strange move given the TV that I've been watching. I'm right around this point in my 1996 chronologically, and Austin winning the tournament feels like a real big surprise based on what we've seen on TV. He feels like at best, you know, third or fourth, fifth best option heading in. So I honestly don't know in retrospect. It's tough to say now because you know the promo he cuts afterwards. But, I mean, do we think Austin, I guess my question is, do we think Austin could have became Austin if he hadn't won this tournament?
Yeah, because he doesn't right away anyway.
I mean, yeah, he's not. It's not like the next night he's main eventing. Right. I mean, it was an attitude change. I think he could have done that independently from winning this tournament. So I'm saying he doesn't win. I think I went with Vader. Actually.
Now let me ask you. Okay, let me ask you this with Vader then, though, is that so? Maybe the argument or what they're thinking is that, you know, because of course Vader is going to challenge for the title at SummerSlam this 96. So, you know, did Vader need to win this to be more legitimate going into that match with Shawn, or was it kind of like, well, he's just such a monster, like there's nothing to gain from it, so that's why,
yeah,
you know, they go with Austin.
Yeah, I don't think he needed to win to be legitimate, but I do think if he wasn't going to win, he should not have been in the tournament. I would not have had him in here to lose to freaking Jake by DQ. I thought coming in, he was going to beat Mero in the finals. I thought it seemed like wicked obvious, and I was shocked when he lost, to the point where Austin, like Chan said, was such an afterthought that I just assumed Jake was winning, and they were going to do like the redemption kind of story or whatever, and Jake wins. And I mean, it seemed like they were building up that way enough.
Yeah, well, they play it up like he's never won a belt. He's never won anything like that.
And it was a big deal when he beat, you know, Hunter on Superstars. I remember that felt like a big upset. And then, you know, he beat Bradshaw on Raw, so there was like another guy they were kind of pushing. So they felt like two big wins. He gets by Vader, and now you're thinking, oh, well, Austin's nothing, so he's probably going to win that easy. Yeah, I probably would not have had Vader in here. I would have had Owen in that spot, as great as he is on commentary here. I think I would have had Mero, Owen, and Austin, Jake. Austin beats Jake. Owen beats Mero, and then Austin beats Mero in the finals, if Austin's going to win.
Yeah, that Austin-Mero match is really kind of underrated, Jim.
Yeah, it's really good. I would have had that be the finals. I would have had Austin destroy Jake in the semifinals, because that final's awful. Like,
yeah,
I think Keith talked about this. He just redid his rant on the show. how it doesn't even make Austin doesn't even look strong winning because it's all the damage Vader did. He just like kicks his ribs until the referee calls the match. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't even do much. Or well, I mean, he pins him eventually, but it's pretty much just start, stop because Jake is all banged up. So he didn't even really look super strong in that win. The reason he looked really good was that remember his mouth got busted open and he left and got stitches and came back. Like that was the whole story. So that made him look tough, but I think they definitely didn't do him any favors with the way they set this up. Or Vader.
Okay.
What if, I mean, I wonder if you could have done, I mean, the only thing I see with Vader, I agree to a point that, I mean, he was going to be strong probably anyway, but, I mean, if he could have beat someone like the Ultimate Warrior.
That's where I was going to go.
I think that would have just been huge. That's what I would have done. Who had Warrior really lost to up to this point? And it's not like he's really damaged by losing to Vader either.
Yeah, because the Lawler match is a waste of time. I would have had Vader go over Warrior in the card and then just take him out of the tournament and do that Mero. Have Owen. Owen's underutilized, loses to Mero in the semis or in the quarters. But
yeah, I like it.
All right. So what do we think about overall now with this one and how it falls into its predecessors?
I think I will say this. Overall, the full show, I think it's the best one so far. When you look at the whole package, I'll say that. Even though 93 to me has the best match, I think there's better bang for your buck on 96. You get the big moment of Mankind beating Taker in a pretty good match. Ahmed, that felt like a big moment at the time. He felt like a coming of age for him, winning the IC title. Sean Bolog, I like a lot. And then, Austin 316, obviously, is a big moment. So I think overall, and Austin Mero, like Chad said, underrated gem. So I think overall, this is the best King of the Ring show. If you're ranking
for the tournament overall, what do you think?
Just tournaments, yeah. I'd say 93 is still the best. And then probably 94, then this, then 95.
Okay, I'm in agreement there, Chad.
I'd probably have 93 show better, but then I would have this as number two show, and booking-wise, I would go 93-1, 94-2, this 3, and 95-less.
I mean, are we counting and when you look at the booking and the tournament, I guess we're counting like the opening round, even though those are all on Raw, because this is the first year now, the final. The semis and the final was on pay-per-view.
Right.
And I think, if you want to factor in those Raw matches, Mero-Owen was decent, I remember. That's where Owen had the cast. And he clocked Mero after the match with it. And Austin Vega is where he debuts the Stunner.
Stunner, right.
Because he beat Holly with the Million Dollar Dream.
He did, yeah. So there's some historical stuff there, too. In addition to
a lot of history. I mean, that's why I think overall, to me, this is the best show, because has a historical value and a bunch of good matches.
This show is a very interesting show because watching the TV at the time, I mean the first half of 96, you could start to see kind of the winds of change, but in a lot of ways, the year kind of starts with Hall showing up on Nitro, I think, for both WCW and WWF. And I think this show was a real good response to Great American Bash 96 because that's a pretty deep show where you had the debut of Rey Mysterio, the Benoit Sullivan street fight, Nash powerbombing Bischoff through the table, some kind of interesting stuff, Sting versus Regal, and Luger versus the Giant in the main event. So this was a good kind of response to that. In a lot of ways, with some interesting stuff also happening on the WWF side, plus the blow off to the Michaels Bulldog thing.
Even though they were pretty much, the Diana thing was pretty much dead by that point.
They had to kind of back off of that, but I think this match is much better than the Beware of Dog match.
Not even close. It'd be a fun. I'm gonna reserve it for Brad and Chad. A fun, really fun talking episode here. The best month pay-per-view wise in history for WWF and WCW when you combine the shows. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I do.
That'd be a fun
podcast. Yeah, Chad, you've seen a lot of it so far with the TV, even as a lead up to them. That's certainly something
I would,
we could talk
I would
about.
Actually think this one's probably June 96 is a contender. Yeah.
Wow. Sure.
Because, I mean, one of the things with the WCW, when WCW got hot and WWF was hot, is they were off months. I mean, their big shows were off months. So you may have a great SummerSlam, like SummerSlam 98, but that's coupled with World Wild 98, which is not good, you know, so, and vice versa. So.
Yeah, all right, it'd be a cool one. I should keep that one in mind.
Yep.
All right, great. Well, let's segue to 1997. And we have the smallest tournament bracket to date with just eight guys
in the quarter.
We started just with the quarterfinals, so we all love tournaments except for Kevin Dunn, and so we have a really short one here. Before we get to the pay per view one, just reviewing the quarterfinals, it's important to note that when that Triple H took 19 minutes to beat Crush and what was had to be.
It was his second chance because he lost to Ahmed by DQ, and his lawyers, this is how stupid the thing was, said he didn't know he couldn't advance by losing by DQ. He thought it was pin or submission only, so he got back into the tournament. So I don't know if that just speaks to the lack of depth, that they didn't feel like they had anyone else to put Ahmed over. It seemed at the time, to me, that they just, like, realized, oh shit, we don't really have anyone else for Ahmed to fight, so they gave Hunter a second chance, and then he was just going to job. I thought for sure Ahmed was. I'm really bad at predicting in the rings at the time, I guess, but I really thought Ahmed was winning the tournament to the point that I brought a sign that said King Ahmed, thinking maybe I'd get on TV because he was going to win.
Wow.
So I thought for sure he was going to win this, and because there were already rumors that, you know, remember he was supposed to fight Undertaker at the show. That was one of the leaked matches way ahead of time. And the local ads. So I'm like, well, if he was going to be in the world title match, he's probably set up for a world title feud. So he's probably going to win King of the Ring. And Hunter just like having multiple matches and getting thrown in here seemed like a throwaway idea. So I really did not expect him to win. But there had to be someone else that could have lose to Ahmed by DQ in 3 minutes. This was so stupid.
Agreed. So moving out of the first round there real quick. So our final four, which is all that you got to see on the pay-per-view there. One interesting note is, you know, for this is the fifth one we've done so far, is Jerry Lawler's involvement in all of these is, and this is it for the most part. It's all the way to the semifinals, I guess, to your point, Justin, with how thin the roster was, that they used him, you know, in a 10-minute match, too, with Mankind,
an
for Mankind to go
match.
Over.
I mean, I don't think I've ever been closer to falling asleep. to have that and Goldust Crush back to back, 20 minutes worth of match was just like brutal live.
I can only imagine.
And because Mankind, don't forget, he had just started the face turn like a week before this or 2 weeks before this. So this is like the first time he. I remember they even call it out on the show. I think JR says it. How he's getting cheered. It was like a big thing, and so it felt like two heels going at it. You know, I don't know. It was really weird. It was a weird dynamic with them. Like, I feel like they didn't really establish Mankind as enough of a face heading into this. They waited too long.
Okay. Chad, what are your thoughts with the quarterfinals and semifinals here before we get to the eventual winner?
I mean, the Ahmed deal, I think, Justin went into that as well. It's a mess. So Lawler, again, is this perennial King of the Ring guy, which, I mean, I guess it fits his gimmick, but I love Jerry Lawler, but his King of the Ring record is not very good or impressive at all here. Probably one of his worst showings on a big stage throughout his entire career is at King of the Ring, oddly enough. I mean, where do we think? Kind of an interesting what if for me is, where do we think Brett would have ended up if he'd have been on this show?
Well, he was supposed to fight Sean.
Sean, I know they said that. Do we think that would have happened? Or?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I mean, well, yeah, I do. I mean, that was the... Unless they knew Brett was hurt before that, or they knew he wasn't going to make it back and they did it on purpose, but, I mean, the card heading in was Taker, Ahmed, Sean, Brett, with it was like a 10-minute challenge or whatever,
right?
And I think it was 10 minutes, right? If Bret couldn't beat him in 10 minutes, he was not going to wrestle, whatever the hell the thing was. And then Austin Pillman and LOD Bulldog Owen. Those are the matches announced on the local ads before. Which would have been a much better card overall. Yeah.
Sure, sure. You know, now
as good as Sean, as good as Sean and Austin is, but still would have been better.
True. Now, one of the things they, you know, for the fourth year in a row, and I want to talk about this, they're really getting the groove. We're like, well, it's, we're going to go with another heel as the winner here. So it's kind of got it. Like to your point with Mankind going over, you know, if it has to be a heel, who else but Triple H could have won this, Justin?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's the choice because they knew they were pushing him anyway. So,
right.
If you have to go the heel, I say him. If you want to go to a face, I mean, Mankind would have been fine, or Ahmed. I mean, they could have had Ahmed go heel before this because he kind of does almost at the end. Remember, he, this is the whole thing where Taker was under Paul Bearer's control and he, Ahmed was trying to get him to stop being a pussy. And at the end, he comes out and hits him with the Pearl River Plunge after the match. I mean, Taker Farouk is just freaking god-awful, too. Yeah. I mean, I think Hunter's really the man. Unless you want to go with the Hart stuff, maybe you put Owen going for it again, or Bulldog could have used it, I guess. I don't know. Maybe one of those guys.
Yeah, that's all one right. thing that's kind of... one thing we didn't mention with 96 is... maybe as an overall show it was good, but like we said, Austin was not exactly booked strong coming out of the tournament.
Right.
And I think that really kind of presented a shift in the way the King of the Ring winner was presented, because for 93, 94, and 95, I mean, that was kind of like your kickstart to the feud of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever won the King of the Ring kind of jump started that. 96, it was almost like, okay, we're just going to give it to this up-and-coming person
right.
that may or may not pan out. I think in 97, Hemsley was of higher stock in the company's eyes than Austin was in 96 when he won. But this is, I mean, obviously, I mean, Hemsley's not someone they were ready to thrust.
Well, he was supposed to win in 96, too, though. So that tells you even more so that they probably had more faith in him here.
Yeah, I mean, I think they thought this might propel him to maybe upper mid-card. I mean, he was already kind of flirting there.
Mm-hmm.
This
really just kickstarts the suit with Foley. That
Mankind, yeah.
Was, I mean, used to kind of get both of them over in the end, you know? So.
And that ended up being a fine feud, but probably, what, the third or fourth most important thing in the summer.
So let me throw a name out there for you, a guy who would eventually win one that we'll get to the next year that could have used the win here to really get him on board is Shamrock, right? He beat Vader at Cold Day in Hell and then doesn't really wrestle much again until Canadian Stampede. Why not get his tournament gimmick over and have him run through the bracket here?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense because I think, too, I mean, Shamrock was still being presented even more so than the next year is like this, you know, his shoot background.
Right.
So they could really parlay that, telling about how successful he was at tournaments of this nature and stuff like that. I think that could have certainly helped propel him farther. Probably could have done more overall than what Mean ended up with Triple H here.
Is there a reason he wasn't on this card at all?
Yeah, I don't know that.
I think
either.
He was still kind of training in a way, wasn't he? I mean, I feel like he doesn't really wrestle.
Yeah,
I don't think
he's not. I, mean,
I don't think he's even on TV much, like in ring wise. I think he's on TV, but until Stampede, I don't think he has many matches on Raw.
They could have. I mean, I don't know who they could have matched him up, but he could have done some fun stuff probably with someone at least. I mean, I think. He could add some quick kind of compact. I mean, that's somebody that I don't think you want to have long matches with, but could have had an exciting, you know, 7-8 minute match in the semis and finals.
Right. Unless, did he get hurt? I know Vader got hurt in that match.
Yeah. I don't know if Shamrock was, I mean, that's a physical match, but I don't think he was necessarily out of commission. But
Shamrock's first Raw match is June 23rd.
Well, so that's 2 weeks after this.
And then he beats Hunter the next week. Clean in 4 minutes.
Really?
Lord.
Yeah. Footage was shown of Shamrock's UFC career after the match. Mankind scared Helmsley from the ring.
Yeah, so just freaking do that at King of the Ring.
Right.
Right. It's a great point. Yeah, interesting.
I mean, you could add I think you could have a Helmsley Mankind. They have their match in the semifinals. You have Shamrock and whoever and the other.
You could have still had Lawler in there. You could have Shamrock or even Shamrock Crush. Might have been okay. You could have done Goldust Lawler.
I was thinking maybe Shamrock Savio might be kind of fun.
Right. Yeah. Something along those lines. Because you could have done Goldust Lawler on the undercard if you want to have Lawler fight. Because they had never really blown that off with the memory called them a queer and all that stuff. That was late 96. Right. So they could have called back to that and had them fought there. Or, I mean, you could have put Goldust. Well, no, I don't know if they want to do Goldust Hunter again, but you could have had that in the bracket, too.
Chad, one last thing on this one. So in watching 97, where does this Triple H Mankind match rank for you compared to their others?
Oh, I think it's on the low end for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Stampede match is a fun brawl. And then they did some. I mean, I think their crown jewels, the match at MSG, the cage match at SummerSlam. I like a good bit. I mean, I don't.
I think it's the worst of the four.
Yeah, that's the worst of the four. And this feud overall, it's not. I'm going to be critical of it. Because I like the matches. This one I think is okay. The other three I do like. And I really like the MSG one. But I don't necessarily know if that's like a great rivalry in 97. I don't know. Very good. And I think both were helped out. I mean, Mankind was going through such a transformation.
Hunter was a good foil for him because he was such a just a heel's heel at this point. Like, nothing about him anyone wanted to cheer.
Right.
So, it was like a good choice to get Mankind over as a face, to have him fight with Helmsley and Chyna, two people that no one was cheering for.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so ranking the bracket performance and the booking and what they ended up going with, now we're going to get into the wheeze and try to figure out where we rank this one. So, Chad, I'm going to start with you, actually. Where do you have this one for out of our first five?
I think booking-wise, I'm probably just going to put this one ahead of 95, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as an overall show, I think I'm in the same boat, ahead of 95, and that's it.
I'll tell you, that was closer than you may think. I think the only thing that, as a whole show, that props it up is Austin Michaels. Because without that, the card is not good at all, and trust me, someone was there and wants to like it. If you take Savio out and put Razor in 95, I think you could maybe make an argument that the booking in the show is better. I think Mabel Savio is such a bad final, and Mabel Savio roadie is such a bad final three that it makes it hard to beat. But this
we didn't even talk about the roadie. We completely there was not much to say.
I don't think this is that much further ahead. I guess the only thing is that Hunter became a star and Mabel didn't.
Yeah.
And I would say, too, to Chad's point and yours about how, you know, they're trying to, it's a push for Mankind and Triple H, so it makes sense to have Triple H go over here and
he wins. I mean, he hits him with the scepter, trying to interfere, so they give Mick an out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I remember being depressing, too, on a couple levels, like being there. Like, it was the first time they didn't have the podium with the throne. Like, it felt like a cheap version of it. And it pissed me off at the time because it was one I was going to live, and I hated it. I feel like they're already cheaping out in the tournament by only having 8 guys instead of 16. We're only getting 2 rounds. The undercard kind of sucks. We got screwed out of Austin Pillman. We got screwed out of Brent and Sean. We got this awful Farouk Taker match. No one actually thought Farouk was going to win the world title. And then you don't even get the freaking podium. You get Pettengill with the crown in the ring as Hunter's bashing Mankind with it. The whole thing just felt like kind of like cheap, and 97 is just we talked about it. 97 is a weird year. TV was so hot and so good, it just didn't transition to the pay-per-views for a lot of the time.
Very true. All right, great. Well, we're halfway done. Not too bad. Well, we come back from a quick break here. We're going to talk 98 through 2002, and then we'll put it all together and kind of talk about what some of the all-time favorites are. So we'll be right back after this.
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net, Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We featured The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team Podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN's also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
All right, we're back here on the Brad and Chad Show, and we are counting down, working our way through, doing a little rebooking of the King of the Ring tournaments that have happened on WWF, WWE pay-per-view. We have made our way to 1998 now, guys, so we are, we've had four in a row that were heels, and now we have the feud of 1998, The Rock and Ken Shamrock here, so... Big, we're back to, first off, we're back to our normal size bracket, so everybody's happy there. Pretty loaded one for what was going on in 98 at the time. And of course, the pay-per-view.
Yeah, back to normal size, but still only two rounds on pay-per-view, should qualify too.
Correct. That is a good point. Yep, they did first round and the quarterfinals on TV, so still just those four. And Dan Severn made it to the semifinals, so there was that. Justin, let me talk first with you here. Thoughts on the bracket and the booking in general on and Shamrock's win?
Yeah, I like Shamrock as the winner. Like we mentioned the year before, I think it made sense to legitimize the tournament. And looking back, having Rock there was cool because the way 98 flows, that, like you said, that's the big feud of the year. we're right down to they fight at Survivor Series again. So it was cool to have Shamrock get the win here in his setup. At the time, though, I was surprised. I thought for sure Severn was going to beat The Rock, and we were going to get Shamrock Severn in the finals because it was really hyped that way. So in retrospect, I'm surprised they didn't do Shamrock Severn in the semis, at least, to get that match in. Unless they had it planned for down the line, I don't know. But they really hyped it heading in that they were going to fight at some point because they were both tournament tested. They were both UFC guys. And I remember being just really surprised. But I think outside of that, I don't think I would have changed much. They had Severn, of course, tearing D'Lo's pecs in the opening round, and that led to the chest protector from D'Lo, so that was pretty memorable there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jarrett, I think, is fine. Shamrock taps him out quick, and Rock beats Severn really quick when D'Lo interferes. So, I mean, just looking at the guys, I mean, there's probably not much else you could have done if you're only going to do two rounds on pay-per-view, and I think Shamrock was a good winner. I think he needed to be rehabbed a bit after kind of getting screwed around by The Rock for a few pay-per-views.
Yeah, that was the point I was going to make too, with coming off their Mania stuff and even with the Rumble and with his tournament tested, he's a good choice. Yeah, that the whole MMA bit there, kind of with Severn, he taps out Owen. The next month, Owen taps out Shamrock, which sets up then to SummerSlam. So yeah, they kind of had that thing going there. It's a good point about I guess Severn and Shamrock just never ended up tangling, huh?
No, they never ended up doing it, really. Because Severn, they have him involved in the lion's den.
Right.
He's Fully Loaded.
He's in the dungeon
rat.
Match. Yeah, the dungeon match at Fully Loaded. He's like the enforcer or whatever.
Yeah, and then he's involved with the whole... Remember then Owen breaks his neck and all that stuff in the fall, and then he pretty much has nothing going on after that.
Chad, would you do anything differently here?
I mean, I think they did pretty good overall in this tournament. It's kind of interesting to look at the first round and see some of the names that got beat and how quickly they did. Like, The Rock beats Vader quickly, so that's the end. I mean, Vader was certainly on the decline.
He's a big, fat piece of shit.
Yeah, he was certainly in his piece of shit stage here. I don't even know, how long did he stay after this? It wasn't very long at all, was it?
Well, he's at Fully Loaded, right? Isn't that when he loses?
Yeah.
To Henry?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he loses to Henry Fully Loaded, and then he's definitely not at SummerSlam, so I think he leaves shortly after that. So,
well, and speaking of Henry, he pins Terry Funk, which
is
about
that,
one. It's one of the Triple H.
Funk was done too, though. Funk leaves it Fully Loaded too.
Funk done taking off the pantyhose, and there just wasn't a lot going on. The Triple H X Pac match, that's pretty fun.
We're off. Vader's there till September. He loses to Bradshaw at a Breakdown.
At least by this point he's already starting to mix in some All Japan stuff. I didn't know when he went full time.
October 25th, he lost to Mankind and Ken Shamrock in a triple threat at MSG. That was his last match.
That was it. Okay. Yeah, because he's in the Real World Tag League final in December. But so he's out. Triple H X Pac's a fun first round match where they kind of, it's one of those classic they tease, just being friendly and then kind of end up screwing each other, trying to get the win, and Triple H eventually does.
Wasn't that X-Pac's first match?
Was it?
I think so. Right, because he's not in that Over the Edge. That's Triple H and the Outlaws.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure that was... I remember there was something about that match I made a special. I'm pretty sure it was X-Pac's first match with the company.
Okay.
He didn't wrestle on Raw either coming up to that.
No, okay. I don't think so. Well, that was on Raw, but I don't think they did.
I'm sorry, before that on Raw.
Right.
Before
the tournament. No, I don't think so. I think when he debuted, he was still rehabbing the neck, so I don't think he fights.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. So that's interesting. But I guess overall, the tournament, it's... I think the final is probably I guess it depends on how you think about Razor Owen from a booking standpoint, but certainly our best final... booking wise and probably entering quality wise since that match.
Right.
So a 3-year clip there. I didn't think Hunter and Mankind was good, like we discussed. So, Overall, I'd say solid job here.
All right, so where does 98 go from a booking and kind of overall bracket compared to you brought up Razor Owen, so we're talking about 94 here, of course, and does this eclipse 94 sitting behind 93, or is it even higher?
For me, as an overall booking wise, I think I probably have it the tournament itself. I think I like 93, 96, and 94 maybe a little bit better, but I'm wavering on those last two. I think 93 is clearly number one, and then 2 through 4 I have pretty close.
I think I like 98 over 96, and almost like in a virtual tie with 94.
Yeah. I think booking 98 has the advantage. I don't know if any match here is better than Austin Marrow, so that's the only thing kind of propelling 96 for me slightly. And then I do take in, I guess I'm weighing the whole show too, which, I mean, this show, though, is
really good.
It's a big show, yeah. Regardless of what you think of the final two matches. From a quality standpoint,
they're huge.
Yeah, they're big matches.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, Mankind Taker is one of the more iconic matches in WWF history. Probably top 15 or 20 at this point, I would think, in the history of the company. Yeah, so.
And Austin Kane is pretty big too. I mean,
Austin Kane was built up very well. Mm-hmm. That certainly felt like a big match. I mean, the mixed stuff is really good, but I think this, from a storyline perspective, feels like a bigger threat, I guess I'd say, with Austin. Where with Mick challenging, you had the Vince stuff, it was more the ancillary factors.
Yeah, this definitely felt like a big deal. Even then, it was a pretty big shock. Like, I don't think anyone actually thought they'd pull the trigger and have Kane beat him after he had just won the title at Mania.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first blood stuff's kind of hokey, but
yeah, I mean, I think the only blotch on this show is the awful Al Snow thing. I mean, other than that, I think up and down, it's a pretty solid. Even the opener.
This is head and shoulders, right?
Yeah, awful.
Oh yeah, that sucks. So,
but other than that, and there's nothing else really. So I think as an overall card, I'd say it's up there with. You know, 93, 96, yeah. Probably a little bit better than 96 because of the historical value overall. So I think you could argue this is the best overall show so far when you factor in significance. I mean, you're missing a little bit with match quality, obviously. You know, 93 had Bret Perfect and Bret Bigelow, which is better than anything on here. But this has the moments that are just destroy everything else.
Sure. Yeah, it's a good show. I mean, and we talked a lot about the short matches and stuff when we did the Survivor Series rewind and kind of how they worked back then and whatnot. And so that was good. Good show. All right, let's move to 1999. We are in Greensboro, North Carolina. And similar to how we talked before about Mabel, I will task you both. And Chad, I'll start with you. If Billy Justin, I will start with you. As Chad audibly grins. Yeah, if Billy Gunn has to win, and you know, I mean,
I don't think it's the worst decision. I know in retrospect,
I think
it's a joke.
He's a fine winner. Yeah. I mean, they didn't do. You know, we know in hindsight that you know he went and lost to The Rock, and that was, you know, he was kind of buried and done from a single standpoint. But from a winning standpoint. I think he was fine. What would you do differently, or would you stick with him?
I would have had Big Show win probably, because I think him not winning hurt him more than anything else because he was already starting to waver. They had already turned him face after he started as the heel. He had the okay match of Mankind. Then they did the Union stuff. It felt like this is probably a good spot for him to get rebuilt. And with the weak field, sure. It would have been easy to do. I think he could have ran through everything. Him and Kane is just awful on the show. Be worse a month later. And much like 90s. Yeah.
Oh, no. I was going to say, and of course, Big Show for this, you know, he's pinned in the quarterfinals. So it's just.
Right. And Kane, I mean, if there was ever a time, and it's funny, it's Big Show and Kane, but, and if there's ever a time, you know, to lose to Kane, like, this wasn't the worst time because this is arguably when he was the most over, was the spring into the fall of 99. You know, I thought for sure they were setting up, again, my run of awful prediction continues. I thought for sure they were setting up X-Pac after he won the first two and was selling the neck injury. Once they didn't do Billy Road Dogg in the finals, I thought X-Pac was going to win. Like, I thought, okay, he's selling the neck, and then he's going to steal the win. I was shocked that they didn't do Billy and Road Dogg in the finals. It didn't make much sense to me. It made even less sense to me that he didn't beat one of them in the semis and the other one in the finals. You would think he'd go over all the DX guys. So that made even less sense. Like, why not? You know, why not have your tag team friends go at it, X-Pac and Kane, in like a friendly match, and then Billy Gunn beats Road Dogg in the semis, beats X-Pac in the finals, or other way around. You know, it was a cool novelty having China in there, but that felt a little bit weird too. They had her lose. Like, why bother putting her in?
You could have even had Billy beat China in the first round.
Right, yeah. Why not go all through all the DX people? Beat China, Road Dogg, X-Pac. That would have made much more sense. If Big Show,
I'm not sure what the Shamrock thing did for Billy Gunn as the winner, how that helped him at all, to your point there, Chen.
Right, and especially since they just did the ref stoppage with the internal bleeding, it just didn't make sense. And Big Show, to me, like Vader in 96, I just don't have him in this if he's not going to win it. I think it just makes him look stupid. I wouldn't even had him in here. I would have found something else for him to do.
Sure.
I mean, this friggin', what? Well, 15 total, but there's like 8,000 heat matches on the show, but you could have found something for him.
Chad, anything you do differently here? What would you do differently?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, I think there's a lot to do differently. I think going through DX is a really cool thing that I've never really thought about until I saw kind of the bracket play out here, but I think that's an easy way to go in the Kane X-Pac opening round match. I think works well too. X-Pac gets the big upset that helps Billy then to beat X-Pac because he's just coming off a big upset here against Kane, and then you could do Big Show in the other side of the bracket or not be in the tournament at all. I think that's fine too. I think there was certainly it's very weird to think about Big Show just in this point in time because of how he debuted in February, and by now there's so much that's went on where he's lost on TV, been pinned, done the union nonsense. It almost feels like if they could have done something where if they'd have stayed the course and could have done Austin versus Big Show here, in a big match, if Big Show could have maintained his heat, that'd have been much more beneficial overall. But
well, Austin the McMahon's was fun though. Like, I don't know if I'd necessarily
could have.
That.
But you don't think the higher power was? I really hate the higher power reveal.
Well, I mean, it being Vince makes sense. It didn't make sense when they did it, but
right.
Well, what about what if they would have kept Show strong and did Vince, you don't do higher power yet? What if you do Vince and Steve Austin versus Show and Shane? What if you do Taker and Shane against Austin and Vince, and then you have Big Show challenge Rock?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you could. I think there's a lot of booking.
I'm sorry,
choices.
Wait, Taker was champion, huh? That's
well, right. Taker was champion at Over the Edge, but I mean that could have you could have done something. Well, I guess you could. I mean, even if you hypothesized that Big Show is remaining strong, you could have put him in the Taker role at Over the Edge. Almost. I mean, it kind of doesn't work quite as well because Vince, you know, inadvertently, quote unquote, causes the pinfall at Over the Edge. But
yeah, let's keep Taker as champ. Let's keep Taker Rock, and I keep Big Show in the corporate ministry with Shane and Taker kind of manipulating him. And then you do Shane and Show against Austin and Vince in the main event here.
And they don't Yeah.
And you could have Show get Shane by accident, and then he turns if you want to kick him out. But he'd end up teaming with Taker anyway, you know, like a month later or whatever. So
yeah, there's so much. I mean, it's a whirlwind watching these shows because, I mean, Big Show debuted, and I mean, you kind of blink your eyes and all of a sudden he's running out with the Union, and he just did the Boiler Room Brawl match with Mankind. It is just craziness.
Right. It's a lot of stupidity.
This time. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's Vince Russo at his worst.
Yeah.
Either way, I would have taken Show out of the tournament, though.
Yeah, Show probably should not be in this tournament if he wasn't going to win. You look at the first round, and I'm looking at the match times again. I think the match times for all 8 first round matches equal about 15 minutes.
Brett's massive razor.
That is just a train wreck. I mean, Kama versus Shawn Michaels wrestled longer than all 8 of those matches.
And then the weird thing is just the math with it. So Road Dogg, he pins China in 13 minutes. No other match is over 7 minutes on the entire pay-per-view within the tournament.
I mean, X-Pac, and that's so stupid, too. Holly hits him with the chair and gets DQ'd. Stupid open. So, yeah. Although, what you could have done, Chad, is if you wanted to keep X-Pac in the final, if you want to at least have Kane advance around, you could still do X-Pac Kane in the second round and just do Billy and Road Dogg in the semis. So you have Billy over China, Billy over Road Dogg, Billy over X-Pac. You know, you have Road Dogg over Holly, kind of pay off their hardcore feud from earlier in the year if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You have Kane. We have X-Pac go over.
when did this... I'm interested when this Road Dogg versus Godfather match happened on TV, because Godfather gets pinned in 1 minute, and I know he was IC champ like a month before, had to be a month before that.
Yes, he lost at Over the Edge, right?
Yeah, so.
No, IC, he lost on, I'm sorry, he was supposed to fight Owen at Over the Edge. He lost on Raw like 2 weeks later.
That's right, yeah. So he lost the
title. It literally
had to
be like the next week.
Yeah, he lost the title to Jared on the May 25th Raw. It aired on May 31st.
Right.
Yeah, so the next week he loses in a minute to Road Dogg. My God.
But Vince Russo knows what's up with Sami Zayn. I would maybe just do Kane. I would have Road Dogg over Holly, Billy over China in one side, X-Pac over like Jarrett maybe, and then Kane over Shamrock. You could have done that.
Well, Jarrett too. I mean, Jarrett is the IC champ at this time,
he's not
right?
On the show again. It was like 95.
So Jarrett was the IC champ. He gets subbed by Shamrock.
Well, he might not. Was he champ when they had that? He might not have been champ yet.
I think he was.
Let's see.
On this thing on the wiki, it says the tournament takes place between May 30th and June 27th. He wins on the May 31st Raw, the championship. So, oh, what a mess!
Yeah, he beat him on June 14th.
What a fucking mess! That's your NXT champion. Oh, all right.
Well, actually, wait. I don't know if that was the tournament match or not. On May 14th, he beat him in a straight jacket match. Vince had made him. Had made Shamrock wrestle on a straitjacket. He beat him in the leg lock.
Yeah, that was the whole Union thing. It's got to be the June 14th match. It's got to be it.
So when we look at this one, if we want to talk about the show overall real quick, because we've kind of shaded in there, which has been really good. One quick note on the Undertaker Rock match. It's Rock scores a finisher and a visual win like 20 seconds into the match over the Undertaker, and then they keep going. It is one of the worst. It is not good. And then the ladder match is fine for what it was, in my opinion. But Justin, I'll start with you. What are we looking at ranking-wise with the bracket, and then also when it comes to kind of the overall here?
I mean, we've had more bad than good, right? So bracket-wise, I mean, it's in the bottom three with 95 and 97.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. I mean, I guess it's better than 95. It may be worse than 97. I don't know if anything on this tournament is better than Mankind Hunter. I mean, Road Dogg China? That's like the best match in this tournament. I mean, the finals is okay, but it's short. I'd probably say this is the second worst tournament.
Okay.
Overall, I mean, I give him kudos for pushing Billy, but I mean, Triple H ends up being a much bigger beneficiary of a tournament win. Overall show, it's better than 95. I'd say overall, it's better than 97. Only because I like the main event. I'd probably put it there though, third worst.
And what Triple H just hurt during this, right? I mean, I know he got involved with the Undertaker Rock thing because that ended up.
No, I don't think he's hurt
to his thing. He just not on the card.
Well, he had just turned heel, and yeah, they were getting him ready for Fully Loaded.
Oh, he gave his spot to China. Is that what it was?
Oh, right, yeah. He wanted the title instead. He didn't care about the
And
title.
He interfered in the title match to kind of interject himself.
Well, he
into
commentates,
that, so.
Right? Isn't that the Testies 1-2-3? Isn't that
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Is that? Yeah, I think that is there.
Chad, any thoughts on it ranking above 95 but below 97?
I have it as a show better than I have it as a show both from a overall show and from a booking. I only have it beating 95.
Okay, we're all on the same page there.
I think 97. Well, I think Justin likes this show better than 97.
The overall show, yeah.
I like 97 better than this one. So. Only difference, yeah, overall. I just have flipped those two.
Okay.
And that's just pretty much on the back of the Shawn versus Austin match from 97. Why I prefer that one.
Okay. So let's segue to 2000 now. Now, Justin, of course, you guys have gone through the vintage vaults for all of these, but I in particular remember King of the Ring 2000. And there was a lot to be disappointed in what they did with the booking for this tournament. So I'm going to start with you. This is the largest to date for what it's worth.
32,
right?
Men. Yep.
32 men.
And we're back to three rounds on pay per view. Well, I guess 99 was too. So we keep that going.
Yep.
You know, it's not the worst. But I think you could argue based on the talent and the booking, they handled it the worst, which is sad because 2000 was such a great year. But I feel like you could argue this is the worst booked one because of expectations, what could have been and what they ended up doing. So you have Angle Jericho, you know, and then to me the worst is wasting a bracket on Crash Holly and Bull Buchanan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's,
I mean, if you want to have them in the tournament, fine, but split them. And then you go Rikishi Benoit, where Benoit does the Holly from the year before. He gets DQ'd in 3 minutes because he's an idiot and uses a chair, which is stupid. And then Val and Eddie. And, I mean, that's not awful because Val was, like, pushed pretty hard as, like, a worker at this point in 2000. I think he was just about to cut his hair and get the white tights and was with Trish and everything. But him beating Eddie is kind of a joke. So I would take Crash and Bull out. I would have... You know, just looking at the round before, you got Edge you could put in there. You got X-Pac. You got Jeff Hardy, just to add a little bit of excitement. So I'd probably put, I'll leave Rikishi in there because he was really hot at that point. So I'd leave Rikishi in. I'd leave six of the eight guys. I'd just put in X-Pac and Hardy, I think. Or if you want to do Hardy and Edge, I guess you could do Hardy and Edge. Maybe we'll do that. So I would not have Kurt and Jericho in the first round because they were both really hot.
That was very disappointing. Live, or no, I shouldn't say not watch it, but watching it live on paper, it was very disappointed that they had cornered that bracket like that.
So I'd have Kurt go over Hardy in the first round. I'd have Benoit go over Edge. I would have Eddie go over Val. And Jericho, well, Eddie and Val are both heels, right? So I wouldn't bother with that. I'd have Eddie go over Rikishi and Jericho go over Val. And then my final four would be Kurt, Benoit, Eddie, Jericho.
Yeah.
Which would be like the best final four ever. And then however you want to do it from there, have Kurt beat, you know, if you're at whoever you want in the finals, Benoit or Jericho, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could have Benoit get DQ'd against Jericho to set up their SummerSlam match coming off Judgment Day. And then Kurt could go over Eddie. And then you do Kurt over Jericho in the finals. Probably was what I would do.
So definitely one of the more rebooked ones, that's for sure. Especially given the roster and everything too. And I get the Rikishi thing. I mean, I mean maybe it would have been easy. Of course, it would have been easier for them to kind of move Benoit through, especially with what they were going to do just the next month. You know, I mean, he fought The Rock. They even did like a, you know, a restart where it looked like he won the title, and he's like you said, stupidly getting DQ'd.
Well, we've said it now for every one of these. There's been a guy. If he's not going to win, don't have him in it.
Right.
There's no point. You don't have to have him in this. You don't need the panties match with Patterson and Briscoe.
That's like the best book thing on this show. And I'm being only half facetious with that.
I mean, just have Benoit go over someone else on the undercard in this match, you know, in the show if you want.
Yeah. Chad, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a nutshell, Justin pretty much summed it up. I think you, with the roster at this time, you wanted to do a work rate heavy final and semis, and that's something we really hadn't seen. I mean, even 93, you had the perfect Brett match, but you could have had sort of three matches kind of worked in that vein here at the finish, and even the quarterfinals that we laid out had a lot of really promising matchups too, and it just kind of went all the way. It's like I can't recall any of these matches, to be honest, so that's not a good thing when you look at the amount of talent that you have throughout the tournament. It's very disappointing.
Yeah, I think the only thing I remember is the angle slam off the top rope.
Yeah.
Right, the finish.
Well, and Rikishi's shoulder injury.
Benoit, oh, yeah, that's right.
Benoit injured it with the chair, so that was a story throughout, too.
Yeah.
It was the shoulder. And they want, I mean, Rikishi and Val were kind of feuding. They'd fight it fully loaded. So, I mean, I get what they were doing. It's just a monumental waste of talent.
Right.
And looking at the rest of the card, I would not have had Kane in that freaking stupid main event because the sides are so loaded. I would have done Rock and Taker in a handicap against Triple H, Vince, and Shane, and then just done, I would have had Benoit over Kane to set up him for the title match of Fully Loaded, taking Benoit out of the tournament, and just slide Edge and Hardy, and take out Crash and Bull.
Okay. So now, based on what...
And Benoit, and add an X-Pac, or whatever you want to do. Malenko, right. Someone.
So based on what actually happened in the bracket with how disappointing it was, where do we look at from a ranking standpoint here? Still above 97?
Yeah.
Below 96 for the tournament, or above 96?
Yeah, I think it's below for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the best match is probably, I guess, Kurt Jericho. Is that what, does Stephanie cost him that? Stephanie cost him the match, right? I think so. I think she comes out and he kisses her or something. I think that's that one. Val Eddie is okay, too. But, I mean, Val Rikishi only goes 3 minutes. I mean, there's no excuse for this crap in 2000, other than that they overloaded the card stupidly and were forced to rush.
Yeah. Right.
Too much.
Well, to your point, they instead of doing just the semis, maybe they did a quarter or so. Yeah. Okay. Chad, any difference of opinion on the ranking there?
So we have it above 97 and 95.
And 99.
And above 99.
Yep. Right now, our tournament bracket only ranking, so not taking into effect, you know, the entire show where we kind of talked about, is 93, 94, 98, 96, 2000 being this one, 97, 99, 95. With two more to go.
Yeah, I guess I'm okay with that. I mean, I do think, I don't know. I mean, this one really is a mess. Like, I mean, get an angle over, I guess, was a priority, but I mean, this didn't feel like anything substantial from Angle from what he'd already done.
Right, so, it was just padding the resume, really.
Right, right. So I mean, I almost felt like Mabel actually went in the tournament in 95, felt like a bigger catapult for him. But it's very odd because, I mean, you look at that, I mean, that was obviously a train wreck, but I think this was a mess and had some stuff. I don't know who came out of this tournament looking better than coming in, so... There is that.
I mean, Kurt, because he didn't choke. I guess that, to me, that's the only guy that looks right. Good on any level. Maybe Val, because he beat Eddie. I mean,
yeah, Val's probably your number two. But yeah, I mean, I think those at the bottom are really bad, and this one, unfortunately, is because of what we'd had the first 5 months of the year.
Right.
Which may be some of the best kind of consistent.
Well, not even that. Just look, just the guys here. Not even because of what we've seen. Just the guys on the ledger. Even if you want to keep the eight men that are here, even Bull, if you want to say Bull and Crash have to be in, you still could have had a much better tournament than what they gave.
Yeah, I mean, you could end up with the final four that you talked about.
Right, you just split Crash and Bull in the first round. Just have Kurt beat Crash and Jericho beat Bull, and then... Benoit beat Rikishi, and Eddie beat Val, and you're right where we said we were.
Yep.
Okay.
So, very disappointing. And overall, as a show, just not much else going on either. I mean, the title match is stupid. It's 18 minutes, and it's not that good. The tag four corners, I mean, is okay. Is that the Joe C match, or was that on Raw? That was on Raw, right, Joe C? Isn't that how Too Cool won? Because they're champions here. I think it's how they won, was Joe C helped them win. And then the dumpster match is okay, and then Chad's favorite evening gown match.
Hey, I'm telling you, good booking.
Poop Stain Patterson.
All right, so let's
very disappointing show.
I agree. Let's jump to 2001. Now, of course, we have Kurt makes a run back to the final. We're back to just the two semifinal matches on the pay-per-view and then the final, because Kurt wrestles, you know, three times on this pay-per-view overall in general, and we'll talk maybe a little bit about him versus Brett there. But pretty loaded roster on paper coming in. The first round is Hardy versus Hardy. Again, they got Big Show in this tournament.
Yeah, but he's trash by this point.
Yeah. Yeah, 2001, yeah.
He lost to Christian.
Yeah, I know.
I do like Kurt getting to the finals again. Like, he's the first guy to, like, outwardly say he's going to repeat. Is he the first guy that won that was even in the next one?
Well, Owen was in multiple.
No, but he was not in the, he lost in the qualifier. But is he the first guy to make, like, the actual tournament?
Certainly, they make it that far. Yeah.
Anyway, I feel like he was the first guy.
I mean, Triple H was in it in '98. He lost to The Rock in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
I feel like
Kurt was the first guy that really said, "I'm gonna. My goal is to repeat and become king again and make it a thing," which I like.
Yes, I like that also. Certainly unique to it. But they went with Edge here. Was that the right choice, Chad, in 2001?
Not to me, to be honest. Edge, I don't think, was quite ready at this point in time for something like this. Even with the way the King of the Ring, as we talked about, has kind of slowly been drifting downward, where it's not like you're expected to step into a main event role. I think there was better options around this point in time. This show happens right at kind of the genesis of what would become the invasion. So I think there was a lot of other options where you could have had somebody hot, like a Kurt, to continue the momentum. Someone like a Jeff Hardy.
Repeating could have been cool. I mean, especially with what was coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's almost like if it's not, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it situation. I have no problems with Kurt winning again It's almost like they gave it to Edge just to have a new face and a baby face. I mean, Edge, I guess this was probably as a single person up to this point, maybe his biggest accomplishment. I mean, he'd been IC champ before.
Only for like a day.
But I think we've seen I mean, don't you think going through the vintage vaults again that Edge has been sort of weird where he has these short runs, but I really don't think he ever put it together till he wins the Money in the Bank.
Well, and he had been doing a lot of tag stuff up to this. Like, it still felt like a tag guy winning. Like, he hadn't really been set apart yet as a singles guy heading into this. Because the whole thing was, remember, the Final Four was Team Wreck, Edge. Like, they're all kind of heels and friends.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Christian, Rhino, yeah.
So it was weird, that part. I mean, I talked about this a lot, and I'm not going to go through it again, but when we did this vault, and when we had Kevin Kelly on to do 2001, I went over and over talking about how I would have maybe had Booker or a WCW guy win this and take the crown and say that, you know, for WCW's first strike, like Shane purchases a spot in the tournament or finds a way to get a guy into the tournament. And, like, why not do that? If you don't really have a clear-cut WWF winner, you could have Booker go over Kurt in the finals to really lay that first strike that would happen, I think, the next night in MSG anyway. And, well, Booker comes out later. So maybe not Booker, anyone, WCW-wise.
RVD.
Right, RVD, yeah. I mean, there's other guys you could have had here that would have made more sense to me if you look at it from that lens. If you're really trying to kick off the invasion, which would start in the show, that's what I would have done. I would have had a WCW guy win the tournament.
Okay. So now, looking at the tournament, what this would be an interesting one to rank.
I just want to mention, too, because you mentioned Kurt wrestling three times.
Yeah.
It seemed really cool at the time, but probably monumentally stupid when you consider all the injuries at this time and the style guys are working to send him out there to have the match he had with Shane, which is just insane, and then have two other matches on the night. I know he's a machine and he probably wanted to do it, but to have him go 26 minutes with Shane in a bloodbath after two other matches didn't seem like the wisest move.
No.
Agreed there. All right, so where do we rank this tournament, the 2001 bracket?
For me, this is like your perfect kind of middle of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Above 2000.
Above 2000, yeah. Below 96.
Ooh.
I think above 90. It's similar. Yeah. No, I put it below 96 just because whether Austin was launched immediately after or not, the 316 moment is bigger than anything we get here.
Yeah, and I still actually think that Mero-Austin match is probably better match quality-wise than any one match here, too.
Yeah, as you could tell, Kurt was kind of saving a little bit. He doesn't really go all out in these two matches.
So I guess right below 96, but above 2000.
Okay.
As a show overall...
Show overall is interesting because it's kind of, again, what you think of the last two matches.
When I rewatched it recently, I was a little bit disappointed in the main. I didn't think it really clicked. Angle McMahon is still a freak show and a lot of fun. I think it compares a lot to 98 in some ways, where it's known more for its impact moments and the big two matches at the end.
I would say 98's more memorable.
Right,
though,
so I'd probably put it
between those two.
Yeah, I'd probably put 98. It's like a poor man's 98, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right, yep.
So I'd probably put 98 slightly ahead of this. I don't know, I think 96 is an interesting comp for it, too. I'd probably say this is better than 96 as a whole. Maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'd have 96 ahead of it for me.
You know why, too?
I'd go 93, 96, 98. Then whatever, 94, probably 94 is interesting to me because, I mean, I like Brett Diesel, but...
As a whole, I think this is better than 94.
94, yeah. So
I mean, Taker DDP probably drags us. That's what helps drag it below 96, too.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, that's...
But the tournament, I think, is... what do you think of the tournament versus 94, Chad?
Well, 94 is weird because we talked about it. I mean, it was booked fairly well, but it was short. Here, I mean, the stuff that made pay-per-view at least got some decent time, but back when I did write for Place to Be Nation, I reviewed the Edge versus Rhino match, and I mean, there wasn't a lot of meat, I didn't think, to that match, really. I mean, it was kind of your run-of-the-mill two-and-a-half or so star match.
And then even Edge Kurt is really just Shane comes out and costs him. So, it's, I mean,
you know, I may actually prefer in-ring-wise the tournament of 94 just because it has something memorable in Kid versus Owen. So, I don't know. They're pretty comparable, I think. It's just short matches versus probably disappointing matches here.
All right. So we are with Edge as the King of the Ring, and the end is nigh. So they're going to do this one more year after the brand split. They're going to keep Raw guys in their own kind of pods of four, if you will, kind of like March Madness. And so we moved to 2002, the last one we're going to look at.
I'm surprised they didn't do 32 in this one. He's had a pretty big roster now, too.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah, he could have done the brand split, too.
Our winner is pretty evident, to say the least. And RVD, who you know you guys talk about a lot on the Vault and kind of his coming in 2001 and his run, is he the guy that that Brock Lesnar needed to beat to kind of? I mean, Brock's legit, but I mean, like, is that the best? I mean, it's him and Jericho, RVD and Jericho, kind of stalwarts of 2001. Jericho coming off of, you know, being the undisputed champion. He's back in, you know, this tournament here. Justin, is that the best they could have done here with Brock at this point?
Yeah, it's funny. On the surface, you want to bitch about Test being the guy, but that actually ends up being a really fun match. Brock and Test.
It is a good match.
It's hard to bitch too much about that. Because on the surface, you look at it, you're like, oh, what are they thinking? Yeah, I mean, Eddie's the one guy that sticks out to me that probably could have went a little bit further. I mean, if you take out Tess being that match being good, and you're just kind of rebooking it, I maybe would have done RVD Eddie and Brock Jericho. You could have done that. Well, I guess, were they split by SmackDown or Raw? No, because Tess... No, Test was SmackDown and Brock was Raw, so they were split. Yeah, I would have done Brock, Jericho, RVD, Eddie. And then I think RVD is probably the best choice, even though they kind of go into a corner at Fully Loaded or Vengeance when they have them fight again. But I think
What about Booker T? Would you put him anywhere else in the bracket so he's not eating a pin in a couple minutes in round two?
No, he was pretty dead at this point. He was coming off that stupid NWO stuff. He didn't really get reheated again till the fall with Goldust or till SummerSlam. So I'm probably because I think he fights what Big Show at Vengeance where he kind of breaks out of the NWO. I think he's fine there.
Okay, Chad, what are your thoughts on 2002?
I think the booking here was about as good as you could hope for. Actually, I think. That Brock Test match blew me away last time I watched it. I thought it was a great hoss battle, made Brock look good, actually made Test look like something, you know, worth a damn and for a surprise at this point in his career. On the other side of the coin, Jericho and RVD have kind of your work rate style match. And then, I mean, Brock really kind of gives RVD some hope. Spots, but you could say it's kind of a glorified squash in the final. But it really feels like a throwback to probably 1995, the last time where we had a winner that felt that pushed and kind of that Jensen to the tip top of the card, as they would do with Brock going into SummerSlam.
Yeah, good point. So 2002 is a little sneaky when it comes to ranking the brackets. To your point, Chad, booking's good. The guy's a clear-cut guy. They want to do things with him afterwards. Where does the tournament fall for you guys here? Is this
we might as well do our final rankings here, right, then?
Yeah, so this is going to be is it above 94?
All right, let's work backwards. So let's eliminate the worst, right? So we still agree, Chad, 95 is the worst?
Yeah.
And we agree 97 is the second worst?
Yeah, I can
well,
go
we
for
had
that.
99 was in there, too.
Right. Oh, so we had 99 second or third?
Second worst.
Okay,
for
so then
tournament.
97.
For the overall just King of the Ring bracket. And
yeah, I guess Hunter and Mankind is better booking than 99, probably.
Right.
All right, so we got 95, 99, 97.
Then 2000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then 2001.
Okay.
Then 96.
I'd put it there before 96.
As far as booking?
I think it's similar to 96. Like, well, I guess Brock was more being set up for something more than Austin was.
Yeah, I like it. To me, it's better than 96, probably booking. Only because of the, this again is a show they had a clear cut objective to, but I think they accomplished that better than they done in a lot of other previous years, and also that this actually had some fairly decent match quality too, mixed in, where the semifinal matches I really like. I mean that Tess Brock match, I really think that match is really good. What kind of champion that match?
So I mean, is 02 better than 98? I mean, I don't think that's a wrong statement. Well, they're pretty darn close.
Yeah, I think they're close. 98. For me, this is probably where we'll disagree between me and Justin, but I think I would have 02 ahead of 98, just booking wise. Because I really like the, again, kind of reiterating, but just the fact that Brock kind of ran through everybody and was the heir apparent. In 98, I do like Shamrock being there and finally extinguishing the Rock in the finals. But kind of to get there was a little bumpy with the Severance situation. So
what's left after that is 94 and 93?
Yep. That's it. So, Justin, where are you on 02? Are you above 98 or below?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'll go with Chad, I guess. Even though I like the Shamrock Rock stuff a lot. I like that thread, how it went from, the Rumble to Mania, and then Shamrock finally gets the win over him. I like that.
Yeah,
a lot.
That one thing I'll say. I mean, we talked about that a little bit. But that's a really good. That's one of the best ways they've done where they created kind of a blow off without a title being involved.
Right.
And it still felt significant.
Yeah, and it was in Shamrock's home style, he's unbeatable in the tournament kind of thing. So I like that,
Okay.
Yeah, I think those are very close. 94, I think I'd still have 93 and 94 ahead, just because it was the whole three rounds, and I think they did more good than bad in those years by a good margin. I mean, 94, you can get nitpicky and not, take out IRS or whatever, and same with 93 with the Luger Tatanka thing. But I think as an overall tournament, booking wise, they kind of worked and served their purposes better, I guess, and had more meat because of the three rounds.
Well, all right. So that, I'm going to count it down again. So kind of going worst to first, we went 95, 99, 97, 2000, 2001, 96, 2002, and 98 are pretty close. I'm actually going to go, I really like that last point around the Shamrock stuff. I'm going to go 98 above 02, and then 94 and 93. And that is our ranking of the 10 King of the Ring pay-per-view brackets that happen. Any closing thoughts, Justin, on that list?
No, I'm comfortable with it. I mean, it's interesting that the two oldest and the two original were booked the best. But, I mean, it's hard to top the way they booked Brett in the first one, and that a lot of that's on his back, too, the way they made it feel legitimate and his match are perfect. And then Owen You know, what we didn't mention, too, was the way Owen ran with the King gimmick even beyond just his initial push against Bret at SummerSlam. I mean, he was the King of Hearts until, what, 97?
Yeah.
You know, he worked that gimmick.
Sure.
And was crazy about the gimmick. And, you know, this. So, I mean, there's something to be said to that, too, as far as making it legitimate and taking it seriously. And the Anvil stuff was really good, too. So, uncomfortable there.
Chad, how about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think the 93, 94 being in our mind the two best booked, that kind of shows how the pay-per-view schedule was at that time, where they used the show as a bridge between Mania and SummerSlam and really used it to kickstart the summer for the company. And once In Your House came into play, that sort of lost a little bit of its luster, and they kind of went more into a short-term focus in some ways than a straight long-term main event, big picture focus in regards to how they booked the tournament.
Excellent point. Well, I want to thank you guys.
Are we going to rank the whole shows or no?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, let's. What we can do just the. Okay, so the overall King of the Ring cards here. All right, let's go ahead. Let's start from the. What do you guys got at the bottom for that?
95 for me.
Yeah, 95.
Sorry, and the next one then?
99, I think, would be my second worst show.
And 97's got to be. Or is 97 below?
Well, Chad said he likes 97 better because of Michaels Austin.
Oh, that's right. Right.
I said I liked the main event in 99, but I'll go 97. I mean, yeah, Michaels Austin's probably the best matches of the two, and 97, we already said, was better booked than 99 tournament-wise, so.
True.
So I would have 97 third, though.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, probably.
And then I think, I mean, it hurts, but I think 2000.
Yeah, I think
I'm really debating 97 and 2000. I don't think either's great shit. I mean, not enough to go out on a limb, but I really don't think 2000 is a good show or a memorable show. So
I think 97, they're both, they're similar because they both have a lot of missed opportunity.
Yeah.
97 had just as much missed opportunity in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, they were certainly very hot in 97, too. Yeah. I mean, maybe not business-wise, but the TV from around that time was great. So that's kind of a dud show. I mean, because you got Canadian Stampede right after that, SummerSlam 97, which a lot of people like. So
I think we talked about it, but the original version of what 97 was maybe going to be would have probably changed a lot here.
So we're sticking with 2000 over 97 or flip-flopping?
Yeah, I think 2000 over 97.
Okay. So that plays to form with the brackets, but things get a little bit more interesting now. So the next bracket was 01.
Well, we haven't talked about the 02 card.
Yeah, let's talk about the 02 card. I think 02 may be next year because that,
I disagree.
That main event – well – oh, no, hold on. Let me look through the whole thing here.
The main event is
about Flair and Eddie.
The main event's awful. Flair, Eddie's good, and Kurt Hogan is a lot of fun.
Oh, I told... Yeah. That's
and
my
Noble Hurricane's fine. It's nothing great. Molly Trish is okay. Yeah, I'd probably go 01 above this just because of Shane Kurt. I think it's probably the best match of either. And I think Taker Triple H really hurts this card a lot. I mean, it's just really bad. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
It's really boring.
Probably have to agree with that.
All right.
Plus, 01 has the invasion excitement around it, too, which helps a lot. 02's clunky with the announcer stuff. I mean, was that? I think that was still when they did the split, right? Or was J.R. King doing the whole thing? I forget.
I don't even know.
I remember it being clunky either way. That middle of 02 is so weird because they're still trying to sort everything out with the brand split. So a lot's kind of odd. 01 felt more exciting to me, which I think when you're ranking the cards and they're close, you could have factored that in. So you had the invasion stuff. You had the excitement around that. Booker and DDP, as much as that was stupid, it was still a lot of excitement. You know, the threat of Team Wreck all fighting and then Kurt Shane in the main with Jericho and Benoit trying to break through.
So does 94 come in next for you guys after 01, leaving 96, 98, and 93 as the three better overall shows?
That's probably where it's at for me, I think.
Can you say that again, Brian?
So 96, no, I'm sorry, 94 would come in next year because the overall show takes a hit compared to, like, 96 was one where the tournament we had a little lower, but we talked about how much we like the overall show.
Right.
Yeah. So you go 94, and then the final three would be ranking 96, 98, and 93. And 98 has quite a it's gonna be an interesting argument. So
yeah.
Let me first say, would you pencil 96 in as number three?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, okay. I think I'd pencil in 96 as number three, yeah.
So then 93 versus 98 for the top spot. Chad, where do you lean on that one?
So, I mean, like I just said, 98 has, I mean, it's a good book, King of the Ring. And has, I mean, I think 98 really, I mean, Austin versus Kane was a big deal. That was a big main event. But to me, I think an argument for it being number one would have to fall with the historical significance of Taker versus Mankind, Hell in the Cell, and just kind of the overall memorable of that match. I mean, Mick being thrown off the cage is one of up there with Hogan, Slim, and Andre as far as moments that they've shown over the years.
And also one of the hottest, like, they had just gotten red hot. They had just finally overtaken Nitro in April. So I think there's something to be said about that, too, of just how crazed the product was and how into it the fans were. And Vince's,
well,
I mean, don't forget, too, Vince at this show is still, like, in his inaugural super heel run, too.
Sure. I mean, think about how awesome and hot Austin was compared to Yoko.
Well, Yoko Hogan's interesting. I mean, I've said a lot about this,
yeah,
in the last,
sure,
few weeks, but that really does have a big match feel when you go back and watch it with all the photographers on the inside.
It's also historically significant.
Right, Hogan's last match, Yoko getting the torch. You know, so that does have a big time feel. I love how they put the tournament over as a big deal. JR, Bobby, and Savage do an awesome job making it seem special. Brett works his ass off and gets the concept over. But when you stack them, I don't see how anything tops Mick. I mean, what are you jumping off your couch and calling? I mean, Yoko beating Hogan's a big deal, but I mean, Taker throwing Mick off the cell is like a where were you moment kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, that's just one of those handful of times in wrestling history where you're like just out of your mind for a moment. And I think that has to weigh really heavily. And even the call, you know, JR's call of the whole thing. And then him going through the cell the second time. Like, just, I don't think that could be quantified.
We can quantify it as number one. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, even beyond that, is the overall hotness. I like using that as an angle because this was a period right when WCW, you were starting to see some pretty large cracks where they had started now the Wolfpack thing and just sort of some kind of disillusion after the hype leading into Sting versus Hogan at Starrcade. It really kind of was thrusted to the forefront in the summer of 98. They kind of got bailed out a little bit with Goldberg. But I think around this time you can see it. I mean, Great American Bash 98 is when Sting and Giant main event over the tag titles. It's a pretty weak effort from a importance and significant standpoint compared to this show. Where contrast to 93, I mean, I think 93 for me certainly has better in-ring action if you just talk about match quality. And I really do love the angle at the end. I think for a moment in time, peak period, 98 is probably the show to go with.
I look at this way. 93 is a great show, but 98's like historically great show.
Yeah. And,
like 93's strongest suit is its best match is Brett Perfect. And Hogan losing is big, But Chad, do you think that gets diminished a bit that he came back and had long runs? Like, if he had never come back and that was really the transition and all that, I mean, would it have meant, or do you think it's still? I mean, I'm not saying it's not important, but I feel like the fact that he eventually came back.
Well, it's all comparative. I mean, in the history of King of the Ring moments, it's up there. But I mean, I really do think Mick being thrown off the cage as far as like a memorable WWE moment is. It's really high, like really high. I don't know of many moments that eclipse that in WWF WWE history. I mean,
made him a superstar. I don't think that can be overlooked too. He ends up becoming one of the most bankable stars they have over the next couple of years, and it saved his career in many ways.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going 98 number one. So there you go. So.
And I mean, there's an argument, but. And we just did it, but I.
Yeah,
think,
we just did it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting side to see where people fall on, because I do think with 98 to be number one, you have to really weigh high the historical significance. But you can make an argument either way.
And we did. It's very good. Awesome. Well, again, I want to thank you guys. Another B and C in the books, Chad. I'll talk to you in 2016, buddy. And. Figure out something going on. But anyway, thanks everybody, of course, for checking out placetobenation.com and listening to our great Place to Be feed and all the shows that we have going on there. And of course, the PWO PTBN. See, Chad, I tried to do it and then I thought I did it.
I know that's a lot of peace for you, Brad.
It is a lot of peace for me. In my defense, I was just listening to the Kevin Kelly show and Justin had switched it. Put over PTBN above PWO, so a lot of P's for sure. So again, thanks everybody, and we'll talk again real soon.